Daf Tes in Psachim. We are continuing from where we left off on Daf Ches Amud Beis, and we are in the discussion of the Gemara regarding the principle of Shluchei Mitzvah Einan Nizokin. The Gemara back on Psachim Daf Ches Amud Aleph got into the discussion of Shluchei Mitzvah based on a discussion in terms of where exactly do I need to do a Bedikah. The Mishnah gave us a general rule that the bedikah is not needed to be done in an area where I never put chametz in there to begin with. If you look back at the Mishnah, Daf Beis Amud Aleph, so the Mishnah says, "Kol makom she'ein machnis bo chametz, any place where I do not put chametz, ein tzarach bedikah, does not require a bedikah." Based on that, the Gemara had a discussion back on Ches Amud Aleph. What about holes in the wall? Do I need to do bedikah on holes in the walls? The Brises give us conflicting reports of whether or not I need to do bedikah within holes in the wall. And the Gemara resolves some of those by pointing out that if the hole is shoulder length, so then I need to do bedikah because there's a chance that I put a chametz in that hole in the wall over the years, so therefore I need to do bedikah. But if the holes are in inconvenient places, meaning proximate to the ground or proximate to the ceiling, so then I do not need to do bedikah in those holes in the ground. Then the Gemara quoted on the bottom of Ches Amud Aleph a brisa, about seven lines from the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara says, "Ein mechayvin osalachti seudel lechon lizdak levdok mimnei sakana." The brisa says that you do not need to put your hand into the wall in order to check for chametz as a result of sakana. It would be a danger. That's the words of the brisa. The Gemara goes on to discuss what exactly the brisa means by that. So the Gemara considers a number of suggestions in terms of what exactly the brisa meant. One consideration the Gemara had is that maybe there's a scorpion in the hole. The Gemara immediately rejected that suggestion. If there was a scorpion in the hole, so then chances are is that you weren't going to put chametz in there to begin with over the course of the year, and that would simply fall under the category of an area where I would never put chametz there to begin with, and therefore doesn't require bedikah. Ultimately, the Gemara ends off with a suggestion that I'm putting the chametz in there over the course of the year, and the reason why there would be a sakana for checking such an area is because this wall is bordering along property of a Jew and a non-Jew, and the Jew, by putting his hand into the wall and also putting a small candle onto the wall, from the perspective of the non-Jew, it looks strange, looks a little bit unusual, even a little bit creepy, and the Gemara says that the non-Jew is going to then suspect the Jew of being involved in some sort of witchcraft or some sort of sorcery, and therefore it would therefore prove to be dangerous for the Jew to engage in such activities, which would perhaps bring about some suspicion of the non-Jew. Anyway, the Gemara in this discussion also turned to another discussion, which is, if he's doing a mitzvah, is he afforded special protection from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is a principle of Shluchei Mitzvah Einan Nizokin, that if you're en route to doing a mitzvah, so you're not going to get damaged. So the Gemara says, well, maybe over here, when he's doing the mitzvah of looking for chametz, concurrently while doing the mitzvah, he's doing something else as well. Maybe he has some sort of alternate goal in mind. In addition to looking for chametz, the Gemara gives a suggestion. Maybe he lost a needle down in the hole and he's looking for the needle as well. To which the Gemara says, that's not a big deal. If you're doing a mitzvah and you have ulterior motives as well, that's not so bad. To which the Gemara ended up saying, okay, perhaps what we're talking about is after doing the mitzvah of bedikas chametz, then he's going to be also looking for his needle. So that means that he won't be exclusively doing the mitzvah, he'll be doing a non-mitzvah as well, and then he won't be afforded the divine protection. How do we know about this principle of Shluchei Mitzvah in Nizokin? To which the Gemara quoted Psukim in Shmuel Aleph. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes over to the Navi Shmuel and says to him, I'd like you to appoint David as the new king. So Shmuel was understandably concerned that Shaul, who at the time was the current king of Yisrael, would hear about this, and Shaul would get very upset with Shmuel, and perhaps Shmuel's life would be in danger. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, make up a story. Aglas Bakar Tikach Biyadecha. The pasuk goes on to describe how HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed Shmuel, go take some cows and some oxen and tell them that you're going to be shechting, and that's why you're going to go visit David. So in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically said to Shmuel, you're right. that is something you need to be afraid of. Now, to which the Gemara basically asked, I understand, don't we have this principle of Shluchei Mitzvah Ninizakim, because Baruch Hu told him to go speak to David, so why should he be concerned? Shouldn't he be given the divine protection? To which the Gemara basically answered, that's for regular danger. But for imminent danger, for danger which is obvious, so then you don't have this principle of Shluchei Mitzvah Ninizakim. The fact that Shaul was going to be angry with Shmuel was obvious. And so to that the Gemara says, that's why Shmuel had to take precaution, even though he was doing Mitzvah Hashem, the commandments of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're now on Ches Amud Beis. I said all that by way of review of some of the topics that we've been covering over the course of Dav Ches. And now we're inside in the Gemara. We're about a third of the way down on the Gemara. We are two lines before the lines start getting wide, with the last two words in the line, Bal Minei. And this is a continuation of the discussion. Bal Minei Merav, they asked the following question from Rav. Hani B'nei Beirav, Didari Babaga. We're asking regarding the students of the yeshiva who are living out in the Baga. And the question is, Ma'u lemeisei kadma v'chashuch lebeirav. Can they go to yeshiva? Can they walk to yeshiva? The walk to the yeshiva, the march to the yeshiva, was a bit risky, especially if traveling from the villages out in the valleys out to the yeshivas in the city, and they would be traveling early in the morning and late and returning back home late at night. And the question of the Rav is very simple: is that going to be dangerous? Are they putting themselves in danger? Perhaps the argument could be that because they're en route to learning Torah, so therefore they're given the divine protection and Shluchei Mitzvah Einu Nizokin. Amelu Naisi Alai V'Al Psav Ari. To which Rav's response was, yes, they can come, and it's on my neck. He took personal responsibility, saying that I'm totally comfortable telling them to come. They're on route to learning Torah. They're going to do a mitzvah, Shluchei Mitzvah Einu Nizokin. Good. Nezol Mai. The Gemara's next step with this question is, look, I understand going to the yeshiva and going to learn Torah, so they're going to be afforded protection, but what about going back home at night? Amaluhu lo yadana. To that, Rav was honest, and Rav says, I do not know the answer. Itma Amar Rav Elazar. The Gemara quotes the name of Rav Elazar. Shluchei Mitzvah Einan Nizokin. Lo b'halichasan v'lo b'chazirasan. The Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Elazar that when you're Shluchei Mitzvah, you will not be harmed, neither on the route there nor on the return. Kamanki Aitan, the Gemara quotes a Braisa that supports this as well. The Tanya we learned in the Braisa, Yisi Ben Yehuda Omer. The Torah assures us that no one is going to desire our land when we are on our way to do the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, which means that we're going to be leaving our home and going to Yerushalayim. So the Torah assures us, Lo yachmod ish es artzecha, our homes will be protected. Number one, we'll have our cows grazing in our houses, and they will not be harmed by wild animals. Number two, Tarnagolascha, Minakaris Ba'ashba, we'll have our chickens pecking away in our backyards by the garbage, ve'in chulda mezikasa, and they will not be harmed by the chulda, the rat, the rodent, which we'll talk more about later on in the daf. In fact, daf test today is dedicated at length to the chulda. V'alo dvarim kavachomer. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu assured us that our animals will not be harmed while we are on our way to Yerushalayim to perform the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. And to that, the Gemara now applies this simple kavachomer, Oma Elish Adark and Lizokin and Nizokin. Animals are very susceptible to being harmed and damaged. And meanwhile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu assures us that our animals will not be damaged. B'nei Adam, She'ein Darkam Lazok. We, on the other hand, human beings, who are not as susceptible to being harmed. Rashi points out that's an account of our mazel. Each one of us has a mazel, and so as a result of our mazel, we are less vulnerable. So if our animals are going to be protected, which are more vulnerable, we as human beings are obviously going to be even more protected. We already have a certain mazel that protects us to begin with. Al achas kama v'chama. Einli ala ba'alicha. So far, we only established that while we're going to Yerushalayim to do the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, we're going to be protected. B'chazara minayin. How about when we come back? Tamar lomar. Ufanisa babuk ba'alacha lo alacha. You're going to go back home and you're going to return to your tent. Malam ishtilach v'timsa o alacha b'shalom. When we go back home, our ol, our tent, our homes are going to be b'shalom. It will be in peace. And so therefore, we're given protection both on the way there and on the way back from doing the mitzvah. V'chimi achim. So now that I know that we're going to be protected on the way going back home, so it is obvious then that we're going to be afforded protection on the way to doing the mitzvah. So why does the Torah then have to go out of its way to tell us that we're going to be leaving to do the mitzvah and we're going to be afforded protection when it could be deduced easily by the fact that we're going to be protected even when we're coming back home? L'cha de Rabbi Ami, the Gemara says, there's another halacha to be derived here as well. D'amar Rabbi Ami, kol adam sheyesh lo karka, anyone who has land, ola l'regel, can perform the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel v'shein lo karka, but if you're not a homeowner, if you're not a landowner, ain't ola l'regel, so then you do not have the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. It is this Gemara right here, which indicates that the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel is contingent with home ownership. It seems to be simple pshat in the pasuk, as the pasuk goes on to say. Sorry, let's go back to the earlier quote of the Gemara. V'lo yachmod ish es artzecha. No one will desire your land. So, in other words, part of the prerequisites of having the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel is that you have to own land. This Gemara over here goes back to the beginning of Pesachim, where we discussed a Tosfos all the way back on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, where Tosfos over there had a very simple question. The Gemara over there told a fantastic story regarding Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, who tricked the non-Jew into giving himself up to the authorities, to the Kohen authorities, as this non-Jew very brazenly ate Karban Pesach and flaunted the fact that he was eating Karban Pesach, to which he basically got the non-Jew to turn himself in. See the Gemara back then for a discussion of that. Tosfos was bothered by a really simple question. How come Rav Yehuda ben Beseira himself was not in Yerushalayim eating Karban Pesach during the Yontif of Pesach? And to that, Tosfos had three answers. One of the three answers that Tosfos gave back then was that perhaps Rav Yehuda ben Beseira was not a landowner. So it is this Gemara here that we're doing right now, which gives us this rule that in order to be chayv in the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, so you have to be a property owner. Although, to be fair, our Gemara is talking about the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, so that means that you have a bona fide patur from aliyah l'regel if you're not a homeowner. Back then, back in the Gemara, on Gimel Amud Beis, the Gemara there was discussing the mitzvah of achilas Karban Pesach. Maybe you can make a very simple distinction that the mitzvah of Karban Pesach is not contingent on home ownership, on land ownership. So that was a discussion we had back then. I'm just reminding all of us about the Tosfos all the way back on Daf Gimel. Back to our Gemara over here. Am Rabbi Avin bar of Ada, Am Rabbi Yitzchak mibnei ma in peros ginosar b'Yerushalayim. How come there's no peros ginosar in Yerushalayim? Ginosar is a town right outside of Tveria. The Gemara elsewhere says that peros ginosar are delicious. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Brachos, where the Gemara over there describes how these fruit were the sweetest fruit of Eretz Yisrael. And so the Gemara over here asks a really simple question. How come they have to go up to Tveria in order to enjoy the peros ginosar? Why not have Yerushalayim with the ability and the capability of growing these peros ginosar? Answer: the Gemara is kedei shelo ya'ola regalim omrim, so that when, if and when we fulfill the mitzvah of aliyah regal, we could have said, "Yom male lo alino alo echol peros ginosar b'Yerushalayim dayenu." Look, aliyah regal is a bit of a schlep, but at least look what we got out of it. We got peros ginosar. So in other words, it could be that our kavana of going to Yerushalayim will be a kavana of eating peros ginosar, distracting us from the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. And with the problem with that, explains the Gemara, nimtzeis aliyah shelo l'shma, that we're doing the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, we're doing a shelo l'shma. And going back to what we learned earlier in the daf, we therefore will not be afforded the divine protection of shluchei mitzvos ein nizokin. Kayotzi b'amar Rav Dusta bar Yonah mibnei ma'in chamei Tveria b'Yerushalayim. How come there are no bath houses in Yerushalayim, or specifically the hot springs that you find in Tveria? How come they're not in Yerushalayim? Kedei shlo yeh ola regalim omrim, and again for a similar reason, because people who are ola regal, had there been chamei Tveria in Yerushalayim, here's what they would have said: Omale lo alinu ela lerchotz bechamei Tveria dayenu. Look, we're going to be ola regal, wonderful bathhouses in Yerushalayim, perfect nimtzeis aliyah shelo l'shma. And once again, the problem is going to be the same problem. It will turn out that we are performing the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, but we're doing a shelo l'shma, and we're not going to get the full benefit of the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, plus we won't get the protection of shluchei mitzvah einan nizokin. Uvameh amru beishuras. We're back now to the Mishnah on Beis Amud Aleph, And the Gemara right now is just going to try to understand what exactly is the Hamshacha of the Mishnah. The Mishnah essentially made 3 points. The first point of the Mishnah was on the night of the 14th, we have to do Bedika. The second point of the Mishnah is that any part of our house that we do not bring chametz in year-round does not require Bedika. And then the Mishnah started speaking about a wine cellar. And the Mishnah says, and you have to check your wine cellar. And it does not seem to be that we're really flowing from point number 2 to point number 3 in the Mishnah. In fact, if we can even develop this question a little bit better, strengthen this question, it seems to be that the Mishnah is almost contradicting itself, because the Mishnah in point number 2 says that anywhere in the house where I don't bring chametz, I don't need to do a bedika. Then the Mishnah says, you know, your cellar, you need to do a bedika in the cellar. Really, we bring chametz into our cellar? So the Gemara is going to try to iron out the Mishnah. The Gemara starts off, V'me'a Amr Beishuros, Martef Man Dekar Shmei. Who even talked about the seller that came up in the Mishnah? Hachi Kamar. So the Gemara says, this is what the Mishnah means. Kamakam Shem Machnisim V'chamitz Ein Tzarech Bedika V'otzer Siyayin V'otzer Shem Enami Ein Tzarech Bedika. Meaning, the part of the Mishnah that's missing, the Chasur Mechzer, is the following. Truth be told is that your sellers, that store where you store your wine and your oil, do not require a bedika. Now there is a discussion where I need to do a bedika on the wine cellar. So the Gemara says, first of all, that's a limited bedika. That's only the wine cellar where chametz is brought into that wine cellar. Meaning during the middle of the meal, we're going to find the need to get more wine. We're therefore in the middle of the meal going to go down to the wine cellar with sandwich in hand. We're going to go get wine. We're by accident going to leave the sandwich over there. Under those limited circumstances, is there a requirement to do a bedika in the wine cellar? But default, generally speaking, if it's a real cellar where I do not go to that cellar during the meal, so then there's no requirement to do a bedika in such a wine cellar. And now we go on to the last point of the Mishnah, and that's the following. In the Mishnah, it says that there is a certain amount of the wine cellar that needs to be examined. Now, in the Mishnah, here's what we know. We know there's a machlok between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. We also know that Beis Shammai comes out to be more machmir than Beis Hillel. Outside of that, what else do we know? Well, it's not perfectly clear what Beis Shammai means, and it's not perfectly clear what Beis Hillel means. We know Beis Shammai demands more of the wine cellar to be examined, but what exactly according to Beis Shammai needs to be examined, and what exactly according to Beis Hillel needs to be examined? So let us begin the Gemara. The Gemara starts off, Beis Shammai Omer Shtei Shuras, Amr Rav Yehuda Shtei Shuras Sha'amru Min Ha'aretz V'ad Shmei Korah. Within Shitas Beis Shammai, there are going to be two opinions amongst the Amoraim. First, we start off with the opinion of Rav Yehuda, who says that the two rows that need to be examined are the entire first two rows. So, the Min Ha'aretz V'ad Shmei HaKorah, from the ground all the way to the top, and that and the one behind it as well. So the entire first two rows need to be examined. That is Rav Yehuda's understanding of Beis Shammai. Rav Yochanan Amar, Shur Achas Kamin Gam. And Rav Yochanan says, no, it is Shur Achas, it's only one row, Kamin Gam, like the Greek letter Gamma. The Greek letter Gamma is basically an L bracket. So in other words, you have to check the entire front of your wine cellar and the entire top of the wine cellar. Meaning as the barrels are stacked up one on top of another and then placed in rows one behind the other, so you have to be checking the entire front of such a column, the one that faces the front door and the one that is over the entire top. So those are the two opinions within the Shita of Beis Shammai. Tanya Kavasa de Rav Yehuda, Tanya Kavasa de Rav Yochanan. The Gemara notes that these two pshatim in Beis Shammai are actually both can be found within Brises. Tanya Kavasa de Rav Yehuda. Beis Shammai Amr Shtei Shuras Apenei Kol Amartif Shtei Shuras Sha'amru Min Ha'aretz V'ad Shmei Korah. The Brisa here goes exactly like the opinion of Rav Yehuda, which is the first two rows from the floor all the way to the ceiling, the first and the one behind it. Tanya Kavasa de Rav Yochanan, we have a Brisa going like Rav Yochanan, Shtei Shuras Apenei Kol Amartif, Chitzon Rosa Pesach, Ve'Elyon Rosa Koresh, Lefnim Amen, Vishlamata Amenu, Ein Tzarich Bedika. And then we have the Braisa supporting the Shita of Rav Yochanan, which is that what Beis Shammai requires us to do is to check the entire front and the entire top. In fact, that's the Pshat in Penei. Penei means the portion of these stacks of barrels that are facing, the one facing the front door and the one facing the top. Those are the two Shitas within Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel Omrim, by continuing the Gemara, now to the opinion of Beis Hillel, it is the two columns which are most chitzonos, exterior, and elyonos, and highest to the top. So in other words, if you can picture, we have now barrels of wine, right? Both laid out on the floor and then piled one on top of another. It is clear, according to Beis Hillel, that the one row that is both most exterior and most high, that entire row needs to be examined. That for Beis Hillel is clear. And then he wants another row. Your two basic options are going to be, is he want the row below it, or does he want the row that is interior of that top row? That's going to be a machlokas amarayim, and the Gemara is going to lay out that there are two opinions in terms of how to understand the position of Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav El Yonah V'Shalmata Heimana. So according to Rav, it's going to be the top row and the one immediately below it. U'Shmuel Amar El Yonah V'Shalufnim Heimana. And according to Shmuel, it's going to be the top row and the one interior of it. My time of the Rav, what is the reason behind Rav Daik Chitzonos? Because Rav focuses on the fact that the Mishnah says the word Chitzonos, we want the exterior rows. V'Hal Yonah Katani, the Gemara knows the obvious issue, which is that the Mishnah also says, El Yonah Samute Tatai De Tatyasa. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara we're trying to do is just simply say that it only has to be the top rows, meaning, but not the rows below. U'Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel's of the opinion, El Yonah V'Shalifnim Heimenu, no, it is going to be the top row and the one interior of it. My time and daik El Yonos, because the Mishnah says the words El Yonos, which means the top rows. Again, the obvious issue with Shmuel's understanding of Beis Hillel, v'hachitzona katani, but doesn't it also say chitzona? So lemu'ut de gav yasa just simply means that I only need to go two in, I don't need to go any more than two in. Rabbi Chiya Tani Kavase de Rav, where Rabbi Chiya teaches a brisa that goes like Rav's understanding of Beis Hillel, which is that it is the row and it is the top corner row and the row immediately below it. Ushmuel, sorry, v'chulu Tanai Tanu Kavase de Shmuel, most Tanaim, however, have a brisa that accords with the position of Shmuel, v'chulu Kavase de Shmuel, and then the Gemara concludes that the halach is like Shmuel, even though we normally say Rav Shmuel halachik Rav, especially when it comes to Isser, we normally follow the position of Rav when it comes to Isser. So it is certainly curious that the Gemara ends off by saying the Hilchos Kavasa to Shmuel, that the halacha accords with Shmuel, could be based on the fact that the Gemara immediately prior said that the preponderance of Brises does go according to Shmuel. So maybe in this circumstance, the halacha falls like Shmuel. Adkan. And that now takes us to today's daf. So in other words, basically, we have so far covered one Mishnah in the Masechta. That one Mishnah that started on daf Beis Amin Aleph takes us now from daf in Beis through Ches. Essentially, now we covered the very basics of Bedikas Chametz. We talked about who's obligated to do the Bedika. We talked about when there's an obligation to do a Bedika. We spoke about why there's an obligation to do a Bedika. And we also spoke about how the Bedika is supposed to be done. So over the course of the last week, the first week of Masechta Pesachim, we talked about the specifics of the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. Now, as we start today's daf test, we start now our second Mishnah of the Perek, and this Mishnah is going to deal with a very basic premise, and that is of Chazakah. We have Chazakah come up time and again throughout Shas. The idea behind Chazakah is that there are certain presumptions and assumptions that are made. Chazakas are established, and once a chazakah is established, so then we go forward based on a certain assumption. For example, our Mishnah says, "Ein choshishin shema gira chulda mi bayis labayis mi makom lamakom di imkein mi chatzel lechatzer mi ir leir ein ledavar sof." As Rashi explains, the Mishnah here is dealing with the following scenario. Let's say I did a bedika on my house. So now my house gets a stamp of approval as I went through the trouble and effort of examining my house on the night of the 14th, and now I can say with certainty that there's no chametz in my house. However, my next door neighbor has not been that careful about doing the bedikah. In fact, maybe my next door neighbor didn't do a bedikah at all. So maybe I can go to bed that night, but instead of falling asleep, I'm going to be laying in my bed thinking about the following. Maybe it's possible that a chulda, a rodent, took chametz from my neighbor's house and brought it into my house. And maybe tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'm going to need to do bedikah again for that concern. The Mishnah says, don't be concerned. The Mishnah starts off, in choshishin, shema gira chulda mibayis labayis mimakom lamakom. It does not need to be a concern of yours. In other words, once I did a bedikah on the house, so now the house has a chezkas baduk. It is now presumed and assumed to be a house that's examined and checked, and I do not need to concern myself with those possibilities. They are possibilities, but that's all they are. It's what the Gemara will call in just a moment a suffix. These are possibilities, but a suffix cannot uproot a chazakah. Once I have the chazakah that the house is examined, so then from that point going forward, I continue assuming that the house has been examined. Just as a technical point, but Rashi brings this up. Our Mishnah says that I also don't have to concern myself with the fact that the chulda brought it from one chaser to another chaser. As Rashi notes, we learned earlier in the Masechta, you don't have to do bedikas chametz in your courtyard. Your courtyard is outside, and you don't have to do bedika in your front lawn. You don't have to do bedika in your back lawn. The reason why I explained the Gemara earlier is because anything outside, we can assume that animals ate whatever chametz may be out there. So therefore, there's no requirement to do a bedika in the actual chaser. So what does our Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says that we're worried, or we should not be worried, that the chulda brought chametz from one courtyard to another? So Rashi says, don't take the Mishnah so literally. The Mishnah doesn't mean courtyard, it just simply means houses within the courtyard. Very good. We start with the Gemara, we're on Daf Tes, I'm at Aleph. We're starting now three lines from the top with the Gemara. Time ago, Chazin and Zeshakal. Now, obviously the Mishnah is telling us that this is something we do not need to worry about, meaning we don't have to imagine or envision that the chulda took chametz from somebody else's house and brought it into my house. Ha chazin and deshaka, but let's say it's not imagination. Let's say I actually saw with my own eyes a chulda take chametz from my neighbor's house and actually walk into my house with the chametz. What does it sound like from the Mishnah? Chashina. Ubay bedika. It sounds like that now that I actually saw that happen, it upset the entire bedika that I did. It's going to require me to have to do a bedika now all over again. To which the Gemara asks a really simple, straightforward question, Vamai, why should I have to do bedikah again? Neimar chalte. Can't I make a really simple argument? And that is, that as much as I saw the chulda take chametz and bring it into my house, can't I argue that the chulda ate the chametz? Milo Tanan, in fact, the Gemara says it's not a preposterous argument. In fact, it's a very founded argument. It's a rooted argument that we have in a Mishnah from Ovelos. Now, we're going to be learning together a Mishnah Ovelos from the 18th parak of Ovelos. Just as a small warning, the Mishnah over here is going to be slightly indelicate. I apologize for the indelicacy of the Mishnah, but after learning this Mishnah, we're going to certainly make the point that the chuldas eat whatever they can get their hands on. The Mishnah over here discusses the following: Maduros Agoyim Tameim. The houses of non-Jews are Tameh. Rashi gives us the necessary background so that we understand this Mishnah in Olos. Now, it happens to be the practice of non-Jews is that if, God forbid, they had a miscarriage in their family, so instead of going out to the cemetery in order to bury the stillborn in the cemetery, so their practice was that they would bury it in the house. Why that would be, what their motivation would be, I don't really have much of an explanation, but anyway, that was the minhag, that was the practice back then. So, being that that was the practice, that they took the Nephilim and they buried inside the house, so now, as you walk into the house, you're essentially walking into a grave. Okay, now let's go over a little bit more background, and Rashi presents all this background. We know that when you come into contact with human remains, with Tumas Mace, so the Mace is able to convey Tumah in one of three ways. Number one, a mace is metame bimaga, by simple contact with the human remains, so you're going to become tame. Two, the mace is going to be metame bimasa, by carrying. if I burden the weight of a human remains, even though I don't actually physically touch it, I'm going to become tamei. By the way, as I'm sure we all know, a mace is an avi avos atomo, which means that if I come into contact with the mace, either through contact or carrying, so I will be an av hatumah, I will be a primary source of tumah. And finally, the third way that the mace is going to convey tumah is tumas ohel. Tumas ohel means that if I'm under the same roof as a mace, as a human remains, so then the tumah is going to go up, hit the roof, drop down over every portion of the roof, and anyone who's sharing the same roof as the mace is also going to become tamei as well. And this is what's referred to as tumas ohel. Now Rashi also notes that the human remains of a non-Jew is subject to a machlokas tanaim, whether it gives off tumas ohel. Everybody agrees that a mace of a nachri is going to give off tumas maga and tumas masa. It is only subject to a debate between the chachamim and the Rashbi, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, whether it gives off tumas ohel as well. It happens to be the opinion of the chachamim is that it's going to be metame be'ohel. Rashi, let's assume for the purposes of this discussion that we go like the Chachamim, although if you take a look at Rashi inside, Rashi says that you could be, that this Mishnah Olos is also going like the Rashbi as well. But in the meantime, however, just to make this discussion slightly more straightforward and simplified, let's assume like the Chachamim that the human remains of even a non-Jew is going to give off tumas ohel. Now with all that stated, so now let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that if I have a home of a non-Jew, so because of their practice of taking their stillborns, their miscarriages, and burying it in the house itself, so the house therefore is going to be tamei. Not the house itself, but meaning, if you were to step foot into this house, you will now be roofed under the same roof as that is housing the human remains, and so therefore you're going to be tamei through tumas oha. And then the Mishnah points out that the non-Jews have to have lived there for a minimum of 40 days. The reason why 40 days, as I'm sure we all know, is because from the point of conception to the point of fetal development, from day one of conception until day 40, it's not considered a fetus. It doesn't have the status of fetus. It is only given the status of fetus after the 40th day. So therefore, if, God forbid, there was a miscarriage from day 40 and onwards, so then that's going to be considered mace, and therefore it's going to give off tumah. Anytime before day 40, it's not considered mace. The Gemara elsewhere calls it maya ba'alma. It's just a discharge of the mother, but it's not considered mace, and therefore it's not going to give off tumas ohel. And then the Mishnah goes on to write, the alpha pi she'en lo isha, and this would be true even if the non-Jew is living there, doesn't have a wife per se. And then the Mishnah writes, "V'chol makom shechulda v'chazir yechol lahaloch, ein sarich bedika." Now, if there are chuldas, weasels, and chazir, and pigs that are living in the house, so then you can walk into that house without any concern that there's going to be mace in the house. And the reason why, and this is of course where it's going to get slightly indelicate, is that once we know that there are chuldas, that there are weasels in the house, so then the assumption we're going to make is that the weasels dug up the human remains of the miscarriage, ate the human remains, and therefore there's not going to be any more miscarriages in the house. What comes out from this Mishnah and all of those very clearly is that chuldas eat. And so therefore, we're going to restate the question of the Gemara. Why is it in our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that you don't have to envision that a chulda took chametz from somebody else's house and brought it into my house. Don't worry about that. However, what it seems like from our Mishnah is that if I actually saw a chulda bring chametz from somebody else's house into my house, so then my house is going to require a bedika all over again. So says our Mishnah. And so now we're wondering, why should that be? Can't we make a very simple argument that the chulda is going to not only take the chametz into my house, but the chulda is also going to eat the chametz as well? So why don't we say that the chulda is going to eat the chametz, much like the Mishnah Noelos, where the Mishnah over there concludes that the chulda goes ahead and eats the remains of the nephil? Gemara starts off by answering, maybe we can make a distinction between the two cases, and that is the following. So Rabbi Zera starts off by answering, well, maybe there's a distinction between basar and lechem. Basar over here is a reference to the nafel. Maybe the chulda will eat the nafel of its entirety, but when it comes to lechem, maybe the chulda will not eat the lechem in the entirety and leave some lechem over, and that's why the house is going to require bedika. So bebasar lo mishari, belechem mishari. Amar Rava Haimai. So Rava says, look, we don't even have to give such a detailed answer. We can give a much more conceptual answer and a much more fundamental answer. Look, Bishlama Hasam. Let's start with that Mishnah in Oalos. Emer Hava, Emer Lo Hava. Look, the Mishnah in Oalos doesn't start off with a fact on the ground. Meaning the Mishnah in Oalos says, I have a non-Jewish family living in the house, so there's a chance that they had a nafel and they buried the nafel in the house. So that whole discussion doesn't start off with a fact, meaning it is not an assumption that this is what they're going to do. This is just a possibility. It's a real possibility, but it's only a possibility, otherwise known in halacha as a suffix. So it starts off as being a suffix. V'imtim salam rahavayim rachaltei. And even if it did in fact happen where the non-Jew had a nafel, the nafel was buried in the house, but it's also possible that if there's a chulda in the house, the chulda dug up the nafel and the chulda ate the nafel. So in other words, we have what we start off with is a suffix, followed then by another suffix. We have compound sfeikos. So over there, it's very easy to argue that when you walk into the house, there's no tum in the house. A, you don't even know as a fact that there was tum in the house to begin with. B, even if there was tumma, but it could be that the tumma was disposed of by the chulda. Avahacha, but over here where I actually saw the chulda take the chametz into my house, so now it's not starting off with a suffix. The discussion here is starting off with a fact. Devada dechazin zeshaka, where I saw him, the chulda, take the chametz into the house, miyema dachalte, and now the only thing that can save me is maybe the chulda ate the chametz. So this is what's called a suffek after a vadai. And the Gemara says, have a suffek of vadai, the ain't suffek motzi midei vadai. And we have a very basic rule, which is that if I have a vadai, if I start off with a known entity, a suffek cannot remove a vadai. Okay. And this will really be the continuation, the rest of the daf today, is a discussion of this principle of whether or not a suffix can be motzi midei vadai. The Gemara is stating off as a premise, as a thesis, ein suffix motzi midei vadai. And the Gemara wants to know, is this really true? Ein suffix motzi midei vadai v'hatanya. The Gemara says, let's examine the following braisa. Chavish ha-meis v'inich magur ha-malei ha-peiros. Afilu hein b'nei yoman, harei hein b'chezkas misukanim. The Bryce illustrates the following scenario. You have a chaver. Chaver just simply means somebody who is careful about his performance of mitzvahs and takes off trumas and maestros, and he's learned. And he knows that when he has fruit that he collects into his house, and now they have an obligation of trumas and maestros. They have the status of tevel, and the only way that we can eat them is by taking off trumas and maestros. So the Bryce says, we can assume that he did so. And that assumption is such a strong assumption, even if, God forbid, he dies, and the fruit has been inside his house for a total of only one day, not even one day, the Braisa says that when you go into the house, you can assume that Trumas and Maestros have been taken off of the fruit. Now the Gemara says, let's think about this. Where's the starting point of the discussion? The fruit was out in the field and the fruit was brought into the house. Once the fruit are brought into the house, that's what's called Gemar Malachtan. They are now prepared, which means now they are definitely chayiv in trumas and maestros, which means that they definitely have a status of tevel. So it starts off by being a vadai. V'safik musarim, v'safik lo musarim, v'kasi safik umotzi midei vadai. And here's what bothers the Gemara now. So I start off with a vadai, and now maybe, perhaps, this chaver took off trumas and maestros. We don't know that he took off Trumas and Maestros, and unfortunately he's now dead, so we can't ask him if he took off Trumas and Maestros, but it comes as a possibility that he did. So I start off with an Isser Vadai, and only because of a Suffolk, I now say that I can eat the fruit. How can the Suffolk alleviate the Vadai Tevel status? Good question. The Gemara answers, Hasan Vadu Vadu. The Gemara gives one of two possible answers. Number one answers the Gemara, maybe over there we can explain that that's not a case of Suffolk versus Vadai, that's the case of Vadai or Vadai. The Vadai Masri, because maybe the argument could be that he's a Chaver, and it's not that it's a possibility that he took off Trumas and Maisos. We know that he's going to take off Trumas and Maisos, not because we actually saw him do so, but because he has a presumptive state of doing so. We have a general presumption that the first opportunity that he's going to be able to take off Trumas and Maisos, he will do so. He will not wait 1 minute, 1 hour. Once there is an opportunity to take off Trumas and Maisos, he will do so immediately. That's what's called the chazaka. And the Gemara says now that chazaka is so strong, we're going to treat it like a vadai. So yes, when the fruit was brought into the house, the fruit was a vadai tevel, definitely the need to take off Trumas and Maisos. But we're also going to assume that the chaver definitely took off Trumas and Maisos. The Gemara gives a second possibility, another answer, in terms of how we could deal with this. We start off with the assumption that when the fruit was taken into the house, the fruit was definitely chayv in Trumas and Maisos. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Dilma mikara emar delo tvili. Maybe when the fruit was brought into the house, it was not tevel. How could that possibly be? Fruit taken from the field, brought into the house, and the fruit is not tevel? Don't we normally say that with the Gemar Malacha, with the finishing touches of the fruit, as the fruit are brought into the house, that's now Chayav in Trumas and Maisros? So the Gemara says there's a loophole. Da'am Rabbi Yoshi Amarim Adam Atzvuaso Umachnisa Bemotz Shela Kedei Shetehei Behemta Ochelas Upeturim Min HaMaiser. As a loophole, fruit can be brought in, or in this case, produce. Let's talk in terms of grains, so that we can understand the actual case itself. Grain can be brought into the house, but not shelled, pre-shelled, which means that the husks of the grain are still over the grain itself, and so therefore, as the grain is being brought into the house, the actual kernel did not see the penei habayis, the entrance into the house. And as a technicality, this grain is not going to be chayev in Trumos and Maisros. So you take a look at Rashi. Rashi over here points out this is based on Psukim. If you take a look at Rashi, the second to last Rashi on the Daf, Ibai Sema Safik Visafiku, Rashi writes, Ki Heichi Demesafkalani Yasrin Yilo Asrinun, Hachinami Ika Lesapuki Ichal Alay Shem Tevo Meolam Ilo Umi Ikara Emer Lo Tzval. There is this possibility that in this case, the produce is not Tevo. Ve'alfa Pisha Hemu Murachim of Visochabais Emer Avalu Kedrabi Oshia Sheikhnisal Abais Bemot Shalah. The Acha Kach Dash Umemareach. As the Gemara explained, and as Rashi now is explaining the Gemara, the possibility is that while the husk, the shell, is still over the grain, it was brought into the house. And even after it was brought into the house, it was threshed, which means that we separated the shell from the grain. And even though we had miruach, which means we smoothed off the top of the pile so we know exactly how much is in the pile, still, min haTorah, it's not going to be chayav in Trumas and Maisros. V'chovas haTevel Tala Beri'iyas Penei Habayis. Rashi explains to us that the obligation of Tevel, the Tevel status, is only when the produce sees the entrance of the house. The Gemara, this is based on the Gemara Bava Metzia. Rashi quotes, V'zeh Beri'iyas Penei Habayis Lo Nigmar Malachtan L'chol Alav Shem Tevel. Since this grain was brought in its shell, it therefore does not acquire a status of Tevel. And Rashi then goes on, Ukishagamar Malachtan, and even after we concluded the Malacha, meaning after the produce was brought to the house, now I shelled it, Kvar Bisochabaisu, now it's in the house, the Einelu Penea Bais Elakish Nechnas Derech Psachim. And the Penea Bais is only when it comes in through the main entrance of the house. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Brachos, Kedetanya Chasidim Arishana Hayu Machnesim Perasim Derech Tak Simon, Kedei Lechaiva Bemeiser, Asha Machnesim Derech Gagus, Derech Hatzeres, Vekarfifos Labais, Kedei Lepochon. The later generations, we have this general concept of Niskatnu Hadoros. Later generations are not as pious as earlier generations. Later generations would bring in the produce not through the main entrance, but through a roof, through a courtyard, through the back lot. In other words, not bring in through the main entrance, therefore not giving it the real status of Tevel, and therefore on a Torah level is not obligated in Shumas and Maestras. Hilkach lo chayil ala Hashem Tevel. And so therefore Rashi points out that because this produce was brought in unshelled, with the shell still around it, and it therefore does not have a Tevel status, and therefore umutar hayoresh hazeh la'ochlan achilas keva. And therefore, the next generation who inherited all this produce is allowed to eat this produce without taking off Trumas and Maestros, so even Achilas Keva. Rashi notes, how come I can eat Achilas Keva? How come I can eat even a established meal? Meaning, generally speaking, the rule is that before the Gemar Melachan, I can have a snack, but I cannot have a regular meal, a established meal. So the Gemara says, Rashi points out, Gabi Isser Darabanan Samchina Cheskas Chavish Shisran. Sorry, going back a line in Rashi. Rashi points out that's prior to the Gemar Melacha. Here, the Gemar Melacha has been done while the fruit was already inside the house, and so therefore this produce is never going to be chayiv in Shumos and Maestros. Okay. Comes out now that according to the second answer, now we assumed that it was vaday a status of Tevel. A second answer suggesting that when the produce is brought into the house, it was not a vaday. It's possible, we don't know this to be so, but it's possible that the produce was brought in such a way where it's not going to be chayv in Shumos and Maestros, notably, where it was brought in the shell, and so therefore it does not have the Tevel status, and therefore, you're right, we don't know for sure if the chaver took off Shumos and Maestros, but at the same time, we don't even know for sure if to begin with it was chayv in Shumos and Maestros. By the way, you could take a look at the next Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now, but the next Rashi goes on to explain why it is the Gemara says that is so that he can feed it to his animals. Why not he himself eat it? Take a look at Rashi, who discusses that issue. One point of observation before we go on in the Gemara, these two answers of the Gemara really are diametrically opposed to one another. Meaning essentially the question becomes, don't we say that a suffix is not mochi min de'avadai? And the two answers of the Gemara is, maybe in this particular case of the chaver dying, leaving over the silo of fruit, either they're both vadai, it's vadai versus vadai, or it's suffix versus suffix. The two answers really are diametrically opposed to one another, because the first answer is assuming that the chaver is going to do exactly the right thing, and the right thing is going to be taking off Trumas and Maestros. The second answer of the Gemara is that, well, maybe when he brings it into the house, he's going to bring it into a house in a roundabout fashion in order to sidestep the obligation of Tevel. So the first answer makes him out to be someone who wants to be fully compliant with Halacha, and the second answer has him trying to use loopholes in terms of sidestepping the Halacha. So it does seem that these answers really are taking two sides of how we're looking at this chaver. In the meantime, however, we are defending our general premise, which is the thesis of today's daf, is that ein safek motzi midei vadai, that if I have an established fact and I only have a suffix, the suffix cannot remove the vadai. The Gemara asks based on the following. It is a tosefta in Olos v'hatanya am Rav Yehuda Omer. Sorry, let me back up. Let me just set ourselves up for the question. In Suffolk Mosim de Vadai, is this true that Suffolk is not going to remove a Vadai? Vatanya, but we learned the following brace. That's the Tosefta and Olos Amar Rev Yehuda. Maisa b'shivcha so shall meitzik echad b'rimon. There's an incident with a shivcha, a maidservant of a particular person. A meitzik, generally speaking, is a bully, something like a gangster. Anyway, perhaps the reason why we need to know this detail, I'm speculating, is because the Shifcha is terrified of him, and therefore lead us to the next part of the Braisa, where she basically tries her best to hide the miscarriage. Either way, Rimon, this happens in the town of Rimon. She tila nefalabor, where she has a miscarriage, and she has her miscarriage into a pit. Basically, the miscarriage is deposited directly into a pit. Perhaps it's a way of her trying to dispose of it. Just again, another interesting topic which I'm going to touch on but not really get into, is it certainly sounds like from this episode that there is tumas leida for a shivcha kananis. If you take a look at this Baam Tosos over here, Baam Tosos goes on to discuss whether in fact that's so. Seems to be conflicting Gemaras in terms of whether this is so. Our Gemara certainly seems to be of the position that this is in fact so, that a shivcha does have tumas leida. Anyway, she hitila nefel abor, where she miscarried into the pit, uva kohen, we're on the top of Testament base, and along comes the kohen, ve'itzitz bo leida im zachar, hu im nikeva hi. And our resident kohen now looks over the edge of the pit, actually takes his body and moves it over the pit in order to see what came out of her, whether it was a male or whether it was a female. Why did she need to know this information? Very simply, as Rashi points out, because she gave birth. Unfortunately, it was not a viable child that she gave birth to, but in the world of Tumas Leida, it does not matter. As long as it was a Vlad, even though not viable, as long as it's been developed inside of her for more than 40 days, it's considered a Vlad, and the discharge of this Vlad is going to make her Tuma and give her Tumas Leida. And now the need for her to know whether it's male or female is going to be based on the fact that if it's male, she'll be Tamea for 7 and 33 days, and if it's female, she will be Tamea for 14 and 66 days. Fine. A Cohen is doing the investigation for her. That's a little bit strange. That's a little bit odd. Rashi notes that. Tosos notes that as well. And Rashi says that this Cohen was not the brightest of Kohanim. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi on the top of Testament Beis, so Rashi says, "Velo." Now we have two Gersos in Rashi: "Lo Nizkar, Lo Nizkar, Oso Kohen Al Azaros LaNefesh LaItama." This Kohen was not concerned about Tumas Meis. Tosus says it a little bit stronger. If you take a look at Tosus on the bottom of the previous Amud, so Tosus says regarding this Kohen, he was just simply not the smartest of Kohanim. In fact, if you take a look, four lines from the bottom of the Tosos writes, Kohen Shota Haya, he was a foolish Kohen, he was just simply not a smart Kohen. Either way, we have now a Shivcha having a miscarriage into a pit, we have a Kohen looking over the side of the pit in order to see whether or not the baby is male or female, and now, apparently, although the Bresh doesn't tell us this, but I'm imagining the Kohen didn't learn much in terms of the status of the fetus. In fact, the Kohen didn't see anything inside the pit. And now the question is, this Kohen, is he Tame with Tumas Meis, or is he not Tame? To which the Gemara says, the Braisa continues, where two lines from the top of the Amud on Testament Beis, Uva Maisel Efnei Chachamim V'ti Haruhu. The matter came in front of the Chacham, and the Chachamim said regarding this Kohen is Tahor. We will assume that there was no fetus on the bottom of the pit, and we will therefore assume that even though the Kohen inserted his head over the pit, the Kohen is not Tame. And now, I left out the most critical line of this whole discussion. Why not? Because we have weasels on the bottom of the pit, and because we have weasels on the bottom of the pit, we're going to assume that the weasel once again took the human remains of that miscarriage and dragged it into one of the holes in the pit and basically took the fetus out of the pit. Ad kan divrei ha-tosefta. The Gemara's observation of this Tosefta is going to be the following. I don't understand. Ve'ha'acha devadai heitila v'safik giraruhu safik lo giraruhu ha'ishaita v'ka'asi safik umotzimi devadai. Ask the Gemara. Let's go over what we know and what we're guessing. We know that a baby was miscarried and discharged into that pit. We know that the Kohen took his head and put it over the top of the pit. We're guessing maybe a chulda took the human remains and took it away from the bottom of the pit. So here we have a suffix versus a vandai. We know we have our certain facts on the ground, and we're only guessing that maybe the baby was swept away by a chulda. And meanwhile, the Chachamim say that this Kohen is Tahor. Why should the Kohen be Tahor? Isn't this a simple case of Suffolk versus Vadai? And shouldn't the Suffolk not affect what we know to be so? We know the baby was discharged into the pit. We know the Kohen put his head over the pit. Shouldn't the Kohen be Vadai Tameh? Lo tema, so the Gemara now attempts to answer. Lo tema she tilo nefer labor, ela ema she pilu kimin nefer labor, vahavi suffik v'suffik. Again, the Gemara's answer over here is that perhaps what we could suggest is that it is not an absolute known that what was inside the pit was a nefer. Perhaps what we could suggest is that when she discharged, when she miscarried, she didn't see what came out of her. It could be that it was an empty amniotic sac. We learned together back in Masechta Nida that if what she discharged, if what she miscarried wasn't even a fetus, but it was just a sac full of air, so then she will not be tummy with Tumas Leida. Now the Gemara says that's a little bit difficult because the Tosefta says that the reason why the Kohen was peering over the side of the pit was to see whether it was male or female. It seems from the simple pshat of the braisa that we know that she miscarried a baby. It's just a question of gender. So the Gemara says, "Hachi kamar." No, we could offer the following pshat, which is leidim ruchi pila nefili pila v'im tim salam nefili pila leidim zacher hu v'im nekeva hi. The Gemara answers very simply that maybe not. Maybe what the braisa means is that, for starters, we don't even know if she miscarried a fetus, and even if she did miscarry a fetus, it's possible he was checking to see whether the fetus was male or female. In other words, it's not a vada that she actually miscarried a fetus into the pit. And the Gemara gives another proposal, which is the following. Let's say that she knew that she miscarried a baby, and there was an actual baby in the pit, a stillborn in the pit. But because there's a chulda, because there's a bardalos, what maybe we can argue is that it's not a suffix that the chulda took the baby, it's a vadai that the chulda took the baby. Now, although we talked about on the Amud Aleph how we can't say for sure the chulda is going to eat the baby, but the Gemara says, nihi dishyura mishaira migra miya vadai gira rum ba'ishaita. The Gemara says that what we're going to say with absolute certainty is that the chulda dragged the baby. We don't know if the chulda ate the baby in its entirety, but we know for sure that the chulda dragged the baby, and as a result of that, we're going to now say that it's a vadai versus a vadai. So again, just quickly to recap, what we did is we finished up the sugya on Daf Ches Amud Beis regarding Shluchei Mitzvah and Nizakin. We spoke out the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in terms of what part of the cells needed bedika. We noted that there was a machlokas amarayim both in terms of the understanding of Beis Shammai and the understanding of Beis Hillel, exactly what part of the wine cellar needs to be examined. Within the position of Beis Hillel, it's a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara oddly ended off by saying the halacha is like Shmuel. And then we started today's Daf Tes. And Daf Tes is really a topic dedicated to Chazaka and Suffolk versus Vadai. Our Mishnah tells us that once the house is checked, it has a cheskas baduk, and now it is assumed to be baduk, and therefore not again do you have to concern yourself with the fact that maybe a rodent dragged chametz into the house. The Gemara then segued into a lengthy discussion, almost taking up the entirety of today's daf. Well, what if I know that the chulda brought the chametz into the house? Though I then have to can't I make the argument that maybe the chulda ate the chametz, and which then the Gemara launched into a discussion of if it's vadai and it's a suffik, ain't vadai motzi midei suffik. Ain't suffik motzi midei vadai. Meaning, if I know that there was chametz in the house and I'm only guessing, maybe the chulda ate it. So that guess is not going to remove the vadaus that there was chametz in the house. And then the Gemara spoke about this concept in the context of other Mishnayos and Braisos. We spoke about it regarding the Mishnah and Oalos, regarding the houses of non-Jews, and we spoke about it in the context of the Tosefta on the bottom of Testament Aleph, regarding the Kohen who put his head over the pit in order to see whether or not the Nephil that was discharged on the bottom of the pit was a Zachar Nekeva. And in both of those cases, the Gemara thought that those are cases of Suffolk versus Vadai. And in both of those Mishnayos and Toseftas, the Gemara suggested either it could be understood as a Suffolk versus a Suffolk, or as a Vadai versus a Vadai. But if it's a Suffolk versus a Vadai, ain't Suffolk mostly midday Vadai. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the middle of the Amud of Umi Amrinan on Tes Amud Beis.